Good morning. And welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We hold two weekly meetings. One, of course, on Sunday mornings from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, where we take up a theosophical subject or a theme for the month, and we discuss it. Well, we present the ideas and discuss those ideas afterwards. On Tuesday nights, no, we're doing it Wednesday nights, so, excuse me. Tuesday was, it's another night.
Yeah, exactly.
It's another night. Wednesdays, we hold a meeting from, now I've lost my concentration.
It's a study class.
Yeah. We have our class from 7:30 to 8:30. It's a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy. We were taking up the principles of man and of the earth and of the universe. Mm-hmm. Now, also in this building is a library, which is in the front room. And in this library is a straight line theosophical references. That you are invited to peruse and use for your study. It's a one-of-a-kind library where philosophical, scientific, and what's the other one?
Humanities?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's good.
Science and theology.
And humanities.
Humanities and history.
History. All those things. A variety of ideas, for we hold that theosophy is a synthesis of all these ideas. So that library is open from 5:15 to 7:15 on Wednesday evenings. And if you have any particular subject, there's more than one student on hand to help with your curiosity. Now, our Sunday subjects for this month are cycles and cyclic law. Now, this morning we're going to talk about dreams and the dreamer. And then next week we are talking about the cycles of human evolution. Now, we're an association of students, and we have to so declare this, that we are joined together to keep alive before the community, before ourselves, these ideas, that they are a constant reminder of our true nature. So we don't take part in really side issues here. We take up strictly the theosophical teachings that have been provided us in the 1800s by H.B.B. and William Q. Judge. Now, we do not say that these are their ideas, but they are our ideas. They have been preserved by a brotherhood of humanity that keeps ever vigilant and safeguards these ideas. Now, so our association is for the understanding of this true self and an understanding that brotherhood is a fact in nature. So therefore, we have no bylaws, we are no organization per se, but we're an association of students. And we regard those amongst us who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, or condition, a theosophist. And we welcome all of those who are doing such work. As a theosophist, we do not belong to any special group. We belong to all of them. So that's what we declare, and we endeavor to make theosophy a living power in our lives. So by being reminded of our true nature, we can invigorate ourselves to carry on the work that's before us. Which brings us to our subject, dreams and the dreamer. Well, this is all about the dreams of life. But who does this dreaming? Who is this dreamer? We have within us, we give it a name, but it has no name. It's ever the witness. It's the thinker. It's the perceiver. It's that unchanging essence that we are. We have this continuing identity from our earliest recollections to this very moment. And we have not changed. Sure, we have seen the change, but we are not that, because we are the ones who are witnessing the change. So, what is that? That consciousness, that witness, that thinker? Well, we get a glimpse of what that is when we lay down and go to sleep. We sort of let go of our body. And before we know it, we're in the dreaming state. Now, scientifically, they've charted out our sleep patterns and what we consciously or unconsciously do. The dream state is very short, but to us it seems sometimes the whole evening, the whole night that we've been dreaming. But then we go into the state of dreamless sleep, where it's said that the body truly slumbers. It's sort of as if our consciousness or our life has left it completely. But somehow, each morning we wake up and we have this same identity. Did we lose it for that short period of time? No. We were more awake and alive in those moments than we are during waking life. More free, more able to expand. There's a saying, you know, the daytime of the body is the nighttime of the soul. Or the nighttime of the body is the daytime of the soul. But we have spent most of our time focused all of our power on the external world, that world of experiences and of a material nature. This unchanging identity is really our highest nature. It's what we find in deep sleep. Now there's we can only say that when we go to sleep at night and we enter that deep sleep state, we are in contact with that fountain of knowledge within us. And it exists within us. We are immortal and part of our nature. So, what has happened to us? Well, karma. We have spent so much time on the external that we have neglected the internal. We have so thought and acted while in the body as to produce finally an instrument that is not in accord with its own nature. It's stated that this idea of being immortal in our essential nature begins work on our transformation. The realization, or even the idea that we are immortal in our nature, begins to transform us. Now, we know the dreamer quite intimately. And if we wish to bring back these dreams of the night, we need to prepare our brain and our mind to be porous to those ideas, or those spiritual ideas, during the evening. But dreams are not of my world. I only experience them. I only am the knower of them. But now we'll hear about dreams.
The wonderful thing about the dreamless state that we've just heard about is that in that state, that is when the soul is truly rested, restored, we might say. And if we prepare for that state ahead of time, we are likely to remember some of it when we awaken. We're told that the real problem is the way we use our mind and our heart, our thinking and our feeling, creates, as was said, a relationship that is mostly physical and sensual. So when we come out of that deep sleep state where we've been in our real spiritual nature, we have to pass back through the dreaming state to the physical. And we lose the memory and the meaning of what we experienced, because that other, that dream plane, is so cluttered with our own thinking and feeling. We have to prepare for the deep sleep state by how we live on this plane. And to begin with, since it's hard to turn yourself completely over overnight, to begin with, you start with separating from all of the noise of the world for about a half an hour before you go to sleep. Read something, a devotional book, meditate, do something that will put you back into the reality of your spiritual nature. And over time, if you are sincere about the desire to regain this memory, since it happens every night and we don't remember it, if you're sincere about it, you'll begin to get at least glimmers. But we have to realize the language of the soul is not language as we know it. It's symbology, and we have to learn to understand and translate that. Mr. Judge says that dreamless sleep is a state where even criminals commune through the higher nature with spiritual beings and enter into the spiritual plane. It is a great spiritual reservoir. And Charles Johnston, in his poetic way, says, "We pass from the world of the senses to the realm of immortal will. Beyond the land of dreams and shadows of desire stands the gate of peace. All men enter there, and all creatures." Oops, paper problems and stuff. In H.P. Blavatsky's book, Transactions of the Blavatsky Lodge, you will find an entire chapter entitled Appendix. And in it, you will find the most that Theosophy teaches about dreams. It's well worth reading. You can go online and read it in the Phoenix website. She lists there seven kinds of dreams, and we've made a copy handout for you at the book table on your way out. The seven kinds of dreams: prophetic dreams, impressed on our memory by the higher nature, generally plain and clear, a voice heard or a coming event foreseen. Allegorical dreams, or hazy glimpses of reality, generally only half true because we distort them with our own fancy. Dreams sent by adepts, good or bad. Retrospective dreams of events belonging to past incarnations. Warning dreams for others who are unable to be impressed themselves. Confused dreams and dreams which are mere fancies and chaotic pictures owing to digestion, some mental trouble, or some such external cause. Now, there are people who will say, "I don't dream." Theosophy says that's impossible. Even insects dream. Anything with a brain has to release some of that inner activity. But there are others who say, well, I dream, but they're meaningless. It's just nonsense working its way out of your brain. Well, we would like to mention a few things. We've all heard of insulin, and we all know it is probably the only real medication used for diabetics. It was invented in a dream by Frederick Banting. Albert Einstein said that he conceptualized his theory of relativity based on a dream he had on sledding. Elias Howe, most of us know this one, had a great difficulty producing the sewing machine until he had a dream that he was attacked. They were throwing spears at him, and the hole was in the front of the spear. And that's what made the sewing machine possible, the hole in the front of the needle. And, of course, almost all of us know that Abraham Lincoln dreamt his own assassination a few days before it happened. He was walking through the White House and found a crowd crying. "Who died?" he asked. "The president. He was assassinated," is what he was told. And he spoke of this dream, so it's well known that it happened to him before the assassination. The Romans had such esteem for dreams that they had a law that if you were a senator and you had a dream that seemed to be about some state concern, that you had to state it in front of the whole Senate, even if you only suspected it might have some state issue. One of the problems that we all have with dreams is that we call them all dreams, and yet they're not. As Job said, in dreams and visions of the night, the things, the activities, what we experience in dreamless sleep cannot be called dreams. Call them visions. Of course, we have to bring them back through the dream state, and that makes for a real problem. A few other interesting examples that prove that dreams are not just flurries of imagination or disturbances in the body. Dmitri Mendeleev was obsessed with finding a way to organize the chemical elements. In a dream, I saw a table where all the elements fell into place as required. Awakening, I immediately wrote it down on a piece of paper. And then he said later, there was only one thing I had to correct, and that was the table of the elements, which we still have and use. Otto Loewi, called the father of neuroscience, was awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine for the work he did in a dream. He was working on the chemical transmission of nerve impulses, which was not recognized at all. He woke from a dream that explained it and scribbled out some notes, went back to sleep, woke up in the morning, didn't understand any of it. Very frustrated, when he went to bed that night, he dreamt it again, but this time he dreamt an experiment he could use to prove it, and he did. And he won the Nobel Prize for that research. Sarah Breedlove is also known as Madam C.J. Walker, the first American woman to be a self-made millionaire. She had, and she was also the first person born free in her family. She had a difficult scalp problem and couldn't be solved. And she dreamt, one night I had a dream, and in that dream, a big black man appeared to me and told me what to mix up in my hair. And she had to get some of the products from Africa, and she mixed this up herself and started selling it. The first American female millionaire. Well-known, well-received, well-respected. If you go online, there's the most delightful picture of her in her little car, and you can just imagine her driving it around. But we should definitely mention, in every single case of an answer or a reality being recognized in such a dream, always comes after the work has been done on this plane, the thinking and the questioning and the organizing. It doesn't just come. It is the result of all the effort put forward by the soul. The answer comes from within. The subject of dreams is, besides in transactions, is in one of our pamphlets. It's called The Inner Man, and there's Remembering the Experiences of the Ego, The Three Planes of Human Life, and this tells us how to set up yourself as a thinker on this plane before you go to sleep, and then you will hopefully reap some of the benefits. It is said that many, many people wake up in the morning, even if their life is not a very pleasant one. They wake up feeling calm, rested, secure, and at peace. And that is a memory brought back from being united, not just with all of us, but with higher spiritual beings who are there to assist every one of us. So your questions are, of course, invited. Yes.
Excuse me. The statement was made that even insects dream. We were just that's just, I mean, how can you prove it or disprove it, we were thinking. But then if that's true, as above, so below, then the earth must dream, the universe must dream.
That reminds me of a little boy that I knew that didn't want to go to sleep at night ever. And when I asked him why, he said, "What if someone's just dreaming me?" Pretty scary thought. Pretty smart for... But your question is never going to be answered, because there isn't an individual consciousness that is behind the earth. There's organized intelligences working together, but they're too smart to dream. We only dream because we don't know any better. This is the dream, this plane. The reality is the inner life. So how can we prove that insects dream? We can't. I mean, you can't even talk to one of them, right? Except a ladybug. But you can know, you can watch an animal. And you know that animal is dreaming. You see them responding physically to what they're going through in their dream state. So it can't be proven.
Well, the fact being that if it has a brain, it has to dream. So let's go back. Do insects have brains? Mm-hmm. They have ganglia of some sort. And they are intelligent. And we see that. Mm-hmm. So I think it was stated that they do have brains, but very rudimentary, of course. But so therefore, they would have to dream. Because it's like the embers on a fire going out at night. We're still shooting out energy from our brain. Because the brain is a vehicle of the mind. That's why, when stated, we should have our brain cleared, relaxed, or not clogged with superfluous things, material kind of endeavors. In the back.
I think you're dreaming.
Yeah.
Right there.
She had her hand up. I saw her.
Oh, we were just going to comment about the first question about the earth dreaming, and we were just going to bring up the same thing that we were under the impression you had to have a brain in order to dream.
Yes, we learned that in The Wizard of Oz. Yes, in the front.
Yeah, with regard to animals, I mean, there are some really fun YouTube videos to watch about dogs that are dreaming.
Yeah.
It's absolutely hilarious. So there's that. In other languages, whereas in English one might say, "I dreamed about you last night," in other languages the expression is, "I dreamed with you last night."
Ooh,
and we wonder if, is it possible, I mean, might that sometimes go on, that there's a, well, at the highest level they say,
Yeah, at the highest level, yeah. You would definitely be able to commune. But yeah. In the ordinary sense of dreaming, no. But there's lots of questioning going on now about lucid dreaming, and we think it's mixing planes together, that the dream state is one thing, the deep sleep state is another.
And it's personal. Mm. You know, everyone dreams different things, but we all dream. Yeah.
So my experience with dreams is they're always bad. Always. They always end up in the same place, like me getting locked up or something. So what I want to do is clean up the quality of my dreams. And one of the advice that you're given is, before you go to bed, to possibly a devotion or just get away from life a little bit, and so you can remember the seven more quality, well, the six more quality dreams.
But
I guess
you're misinterpreting something. You are saying that's not a quality dream. It might be exactly the highest quality possible that you have to go within yourself and discover, where am I locked up? There is something that I'm being told that's of benefit to me. And obviously you're being told it over and over and over. So spend some time considering that. Remember, we're dreaming in symbols, and we have to find out what those symbols mean to us. That's why no one else can interpret your dreams for you, although you can talk to a friend who seems wise, but you have to do it yourself. But if you're having the same dream over and over, it's important, it's significant, it isn't bad, it's telling you something. Yes.
I'll refer back to the 7 points that you're speaking about, the HP it's spelled out for how many different kinds of dreams there are, or different varieties. What does Blavatsky or Judge say about how to decipher or understand the difference between dreams sent by adepts and ones that are prophetic?
Well, it would would require a lot of concentration on the task. I mean, you can't do it overnight. You have to begin building the muscles for it. If our desire is to understand in order, as was said, to help humanity, we will be able to make progress more quickly. We just have to keep our eye on our motive. But it isn't important where it came from. What is important is what it, in the sense of an impulse, wants us to do. We're in charge, whether the highest being in the universe sent us a message or the lowest. We're in charge of what we do with it.
So you're saying there's 7 varieties.
Oh, there's more than that.
Well, they're only determined at the end of the manifest and not at the beginning. In other words, there's no way to know whether or not it's prophetic or from the depth until after you find out that it happens?
No, until after you wake up and realize you know it. If you have a prophetic dream, you are going to awaken with that sense of this is going to happen. So it
isn't... You just have to brainstorm the differences between, say, remote viewing and inspiration.
Well, remote viewing, we assume you mean a sort of astral projection or clairvoyance.
Well, that, sure.
Yeah. Well, the difference is they know what they know while they're conscious on this plane.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, in dreams, we're bringing it back. Now, if it's a significant dream, it is really a vision, and you will remember and recall much of it. One of the things we're told is not to go around talking about a significant dream until we have digested its meaning.
And we're not to become fascinated.
Mm-hmm.
It's like entertainment, or like, you know, or I know this, I know that, and I know about dreams. Dreams are very personal. And whether it's prophetic or whether it's from an adept, it's not important. What is important is what you do with that dream. Is that dream solely about me, or is it about me and my relationship to everyone else? Because I'm attached to everyone else at some level. So we're an individuality. We're the perceiver for this body, for this life that we are now enjoying. This manifestation of some 80, 90 short years, 100. Maybe 120? But it's a gift. But it's a gift that gives over and over again. So what are we doing? We're not paying attention, as was said by karma, because we have neglected this inner nature, this soul nature, this witness, this perceiver. Go through the day as the perceiver. unattached, impersonal, in your inner nature.
If we receive what we believe to be a prophetic dream about someone we know, is it our duty to warn them?
It says, besides a prophetic dream, it's a separate category, a warning dream sent for others because they're not impressible. Yes, it would be right to say, I had a dream and it's a dream about you and you should da-da-da-da, you should know. We don't know anyone who's ever had that. We do know one who had a prophetic dream for himself. He dreamt, and he was a violinist with the Philadelphia Orchestra, and he dreamt that he was going to fall and break his wrist. And so he did not leave the house. And his wife naturally put him to work to do some things. He climbed a ladder, boom, fell and broke his wrist. So some prophecies are going to come true, even if there's a warning. But one can only assume if there's a warning dream, it's because there's a chance of preventing something.
But we have to live our life in the moment. We can't live in fear. Fear blocks us up. It blocks us up. And we should know that we are not any of these experiences. We're beyond all that, and we know it.
He had
yes. How does theosophy explain sleepwalking?
Ah, there's wonderful things on that. HPB wrote a great deal about it, because in many cases, sleepwalkers do things that are of benefit to others. One was a young woman who somehow she had mischievously taken papers from her father's office and hid them in a newel post. And after he died, no one could find his will. She didn't recall doing it, but sleepwalking, she went to the newel post, opened it, and brought out the will. So sleepwalking, there's a consciousness that isn't on the physical plane. And we've read many warnings not to awaken someone who's sleepwalking, that the shock to their system is too extreme. But sleepwalking's not a healthy thing to do, because you can get into a lot of trouble physically.
You would think, though, you would guide them back to bed if you could, gently.
Well, I think that is tried, yes. Okay. But not to make them aware that you're there on the plane, you know, that they
like
think
they're... someone's having a seizure, you're supposed to, not restrain them so much as just guide them through their motions until they stop, so they don't fall down, if possible.
Yes.
That's the latest.
One thing that we know has been helpful is trying to, if you can remember them, keeping a sleep journal. Because then after a while, you can see if there's a pattern.
Repetitions, yeah.
Of different occurrences that are in the dreams and maybe make more sense of it. But we do have a question. When one wakes up and it's like, you know, it's like, I dreamt last night, but I really can't remember it. You know, but you kind of have an essence about the feeling from it. And then throughout the day, something occurs that brings that dream back to your mind. So can we say that the dreams are like stored in one of the seven levels of the astral then?
You know, we're taught that after death there's the review of the entire lifetime. Every dream will be there. Anything that came into our consciousness, the peripheral vision of anything that we saw will be there. It's all stored. So we will get those to see those dreams again for all the good it will do us. But every one of these people that we mentioned, along with many, many others, always kept a notebook and a pen by their bed. So if they woke up, as soon as they woke up, they wrote down what they could remember. Paracelsus said, you shouldn't leave your bed. You have to take care of some things, yes. And then stay in the room where you were dreaming. Do not talk to anyone else. Do not have any food. Hopefully your memories will start coming back. But it is important to keep a sleep journal. You will see the repetition. Go ahead.
We had something to say.
Well, good.
We just said it. Yes.
regarding looking for meaning in the dreams, when we have an aim of analyzing the meaning, aren't we reducing the actual meaning of the dream to what we are looking for?
Well, that's true. But if you write down the events of the dream, then you can look at it in many different ways. If you write it down through that sort of narrow channel that you're talking about, that changes it. If you just write down the events, and we're told that, and what's that example that a dream had by a king and the same dream had by a peasant, they would be totally different meanings because it would come from their own experience. So we have to remember that the symbol in a dream has meaning for us as an individual.
And it's also stated that, if you're going to write a letter, you sleep on it. Or a response to something, you sleep on it. But life, if we are pursuing something in life, and we are endeavoring to understand something, we put all of our focus, all of our attention on it. So why wouldn't we dream about it in some abstract way? Again, it was stated that we dream in symbols. It's not a language which we readily understand because we haven't paid attention to it. So the symbolism that we have in dreams has a meaning, but only to you. But we sometimes share certain symbols that we say, a boat on the ocean, and they can mean all these universal ideas. So the symbols are the symbols of our life.
We once read a wonderful interpretation of how we twist symbols. A person looking at a symbol of a beautiful boat said, this is a beautiful thing to sit in the harbor and rest. And the answer was, that's not what a boat was meant for. Yes?
It's our understanding that here in these rooms...
Wait, I can't hear you.
It's our understanding that here in these rooms we're first taught about the meaning of self-control and independent devotion. But when we look around in our community today, how can we call ourselves independent devotion when there's so much to attract or distract our attention?
Well, today is no different from any other day. Go back 5,000 years. What were the attractions? They were there, and they're just as attractive as the things we find now. We're faster, and we have more things to think about or to choose from, but it's still our individual choice. We either decide we're not going to pay attention to all that noise, or we're going to jump in and enjoy it totally. But it's always the individual that is deciding for themselves. And remember, as karma was mentioned, if we've made many ignorant choices, we will have difficulties until we learn that's not the way to do it. Now, that's one of the things that the deep sleep state is beneficial for. You think of your difficulties, your problems, not blaming them on anyone else, but thinking about them, this is mine to work with. You will get answers in what seems to be dreams, but were really visions. You will get help if you really want it. As was said earlier, if we want wisdom the way we want things, we will get it very quickly. Yes?
What about people who claim they don't dream?
They're wrong. They don't.
Do they suppress their dreams?
No, they do not remember. There's no entryway. The analogy is used of a sort of channel for water to flow through. If that channel is blocked up or poorly constructed, the water can't go through. Well, it's the same thing. We have a channel from the deep sleep state through the dreaming state back into our waking state. And if it's damaged in any way, then we're not going to know we dreamt. But they have to dream. We would go mad if we did not have this. Remember, we are spiritual beings with tremendous power and possibilities. We would go mad if we didn't have that moment every single night. Well, it's more than one moment. We go in and out of the deep sleep state. If we didn't have that, we would go mad.
So if someone tells me I don't dream, it's likely that they just suppress their dreams.
You don't even have to suppress it. It happens all by itself because you've broken
like
the channel.
Doesn't remember a dream.
But they've broken a channel. You don't have to suppress anything. That's a conscious choice. You can't choose to suppress something you don't even remember, and they don't remember. It's how they live and think and act.
And many times when the body is exhausted, we don't remember
anything.
Our dreams, because we are so exhausted from activity during the waking hours.
And some who use alcohol or drugs to help themselves go to sleep, they don't remember dreams either.
But we think she has a point, because the after-death states are analogous to the dream state, and if a person is very materialistic and they don't believe in any afterlife, then they, in a sense, sleep through their devakan, or just they don't experience it. So a person who really firmly believes they don't dream is probably much less likely to bring anything back.
We see the analogy that you're making, but it's not a true one. Because if you have a brain, even if you're an insect, you have to dream. So the thinker has to dream. They don't have to remember. The brain gives out impulses, as she says, it could be bad digestion, whatever. And then the thinker goes into the deep sleep state because it's the thinker's real plane of living. We're not living here. We're observing here. We're watching here. We're choosing and willing here. But this isn't our life. Take all this away, we're still alive. We're just alive on another plane with a different kind of body.
We are a continuity of consciousness. Mm-hmm. We enter all kinds of different states of consciousness. And, you know, but we are still that same identity. We are still that same witness to what is happening.
Yes.
So then, if the purpose for being here, if one of the purposes for being here is to learn the lessons that the soul has to learn, then it's almost like, in certain ways, if there's still things that haven't been learned, and a lot of times we can go through experiences and still not really learn it because we're not being very conscious, then it's almost like this is the dream, the information from which is not making it into the soul. So it's almost like a reverse dream, depending on what your perspective is. It's almost like if you know you are the soul, and you're not clear seeing and fully aware yet, then this is as much of a dream to you, so to speak, as the dream at night is to us here.
Well, you are being a pure philosopher. Every philosopher has said this, the material waking life, is a dream. It's not the reality. It is a dream. We are asleep and dreaming. If we knew who and what we were, we would instantly have acquisition to the wisdom that is ours. We've been incarnating, Theosophy tells us, for 18 million years. Even the slowest learner is going to learn something in 18 million years. If we could have access to any of those memories, not the particulars, but what I know, what I learned. And as you said, the reason it's blocked from us now is we have not digested things that are necessary. Life is a school. It wants us to learn the things we have to learn, and then we will have that inner wisdom.
And so sometimes we think we read that HPV mentioned this. Sometimes she'll refer to the Walking Dead, which the implication is people who are not spiritually awakened. But that's also, that's similar to saying that the people that you're sleeping through life.
Right.
And so awakening in life is you're getting at least a little more coming through. And so it would seem that an adept is more fully awake than the average there.
And
well, another way of expressing it is we've heard that some souls are immature. They haven't had the experience. They haven't come to a realization of their true nature. Again, go back to the statement that once we are given the idea that we are immortal in our essential nature, we begin to transform. You know, the karma and reincarnation, the law of hope and responsibility, is how we live our life. So, the program has been laid out for us. Mm-hmm. How we can live our life and untangle this web that we have woven and come to a true realization of who we are. That is our biggest gift that we can give to each other. And that's why we come to these rooms to practice. Even to say these words in public about dreams and about the eternal pilgrim and so forth is liberating. It serves a purpose in our community for these ideas to live. Because this is the foundation of Theosophy, but it's the foundation of life. It's the very foundation of our life. And we come to this study and we are constantly reminded how we forget time and time again that we are not these bodies, we are not these emotions, we are not these sensations. We are not this grief. We are not this fear. We are none of these. We are more than all of that. And that's why in dreams, we are the experiencer. And we'll bring back what we need if we so endeavor to do so. But it's not something we do one night and forget the next. It's a continuity. Life is a continuity, and how we can blend our own regiment of life, our own discipline, into that continuity.
We'd just like to add that the students who get up here on the platform do not do it because they think they know all of this and they think they're wise. They are giving out what's been given to them. And reciprocity is the way of life. A student knows how grateful they are for what they've been given. Therefore, they're going to do anything that they can to be part of it, to give as was given to them.
That's why we constantly bring our attention back to the declaration. Why we are here and how we are here. On an impersonal basis, to promote these ideas among the general public.
And both. The astral light.
Yes. Yes.
Well, it was just said that a truer realization of who we are helps us to realize something about dreams, the value of dreams, and to
yes.
recognize what they are.
Yeah.
Well, the declaration talks about the work of the lodge is the dissemination of the principles of the philosophy and the exemplification and the exemplification and practice of them. So what it's saying is, if we exemplify them, that leads to a true realization of the self. So then if we exemplify or put in practice the principles of theosophy, we'll automatically, if we're doing it right, be able to better understand the dreams that we have. Where's the connection? How is there a connection between living a philosophical life and understanding our dreams?
That's definitely why someone should get this pamphlet. If you change the tenor of your own brain, you change the reception for the dreams and visions coming back. It's as though you fine-tune.
Right.
Probably none of you remember trying to tune in a radio way back in the old days, and you had mostly static, and it would take a lot of turning to find a station.
I remember, and I'm not that old.
Okay. You have an old radio. But it's the same sort of thing. We have to tune this instrument to be in line with our own powers. And we don't. We use what does Shakespeare said, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers because we put all our focus outside us.
Right.
If we were to turn that energy within, who am I? What is divine? Am I divine? What is life? What is its purpose? What are dreams for? If we start asking those questions, because the answers are already within us, we can start getting some answers.
Again, it's how we live our life. And it's as simple as reading the Bhagavad Gita, devotional book, but it gives us instructions on how to live our life. It doesn't tell us, it just gives us reasonable explanation and shows us that by not looking for the rewards of your labor, doing that which needs to be done for the doing's sake, and like sacrificing it up to our brothers and sisters, to the universe, however we want to present it to ourselves. But if we live our life consciously, with these ideas in mind, we can't do any better than try.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all of us can do, is just try.
That's, time is up.
And we'll try to end right now. But we would like to remind you that all activities of this lodge are sustained through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. And all are welcome to participate. Meeting adjourned.